The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is brought to you by Harrah's Resort SoCal. Nestled against a rolling hillside and just down the road from Palomar Mountain, guests at Harrah's Resort SoCal can expect gorgeous views, friendly staff, available night and day to encourage everyone to have a great time. When I was there recently, I had a chance to dine at California's first and the nation's largest Hell's Kitchen. And it's true, the beef Wellington and sticky toffee dessert are great. The restaurant is inspired by the hit TV show and features a menu approved by the Michelin star celebrity chef, Gordon Ramsay himself. Hope to see you all at Harrah's Resort SoCal in 2024.
You know, a lot of our work is also just kind of luck as well.
Yeah.
Getting cast, because there's only one role and there's like, you know, 50 to 300 people auditioning for the same role. Only one person's going to get it. And like, just because you don't get it doesn't mean that you're a terrible actor. It's just that there's only one role to fill. My name is Xanthi Huynh. I am a voice actor, and you may know me from works such as Persona 5, Fire Emblem Three Houses, Sailor Moon Eternal, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, and Apex Legends Mobile.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over the world.
Thank you so much. What does it mean to be Vietnamese to you nowadays?
It's such a loaded question. It's like, how do I encapsulize like my whole like heritage? I guess I'm technically like half Vietnamese and Chinese, but like I think culturally I grew up a little bit more on the Vietnamese side. The history, like my parents were boat people that escaped during the, like that traveled during the war. You know, it's about the food, it's about family. It's so much, really. I don't even know where to start. But that's what I think when I hear like, you know, what it means to be Vietnamese.
You have a very unique name, spelled X-A-N-T-H-E, and I was trying to figure out what the origin story was. Can you share that with me?
Well, it's a lot of people always ask, like, is that Vietnamese? And I'm like, no, it's definitely not. My parents, so like when I was born, I was given a Vietnamese name, and it's Ha, and it's spelled H-A. And so one of my aunts told my mom, like, she's gonna get made fun of in school, you can't name her that. And so my mom went to sit, she looked through like a name baby name book to look for like a cool name that nobody will make fun of, and she happened upon Xanthi, and she went to City Hall and changed my name to that. And growing up, I was very frustrated with it, because you know, nobody knew how to spell it or pronounce it. I mean, it still happens now. It's like a Greek name. It means golden yellow. It's a, you know, very beautiful, I think. But it wasn't until probably when I was like in my teens that I appreciated having such a unique name that nobody else has. Because then I wouldn't be like the fifth like Jennifer in class, you know, something yeah. like that. So I appreciated having like a unique name.
And your mother, is she a, like a very unique thinker in terms of, you know, the way she does things?
I would say so. She's very creative, very talented in like, you know, home decor and like especially cooking. It's like amazing. My parents used to own like restaurants, and like I worked there quite a bit too. I was like a lot of like, you know, like immigrant families go. She's very strong-willed and a very loving mother.
Yeah, I mean, to look for a name like your name, and it's not Vietnamese-based, it takes a lot of courage to, and it takes thinking outside the box. And the reason I ask this is because oftentimes how we turn out, you know, has a lot to do with who we are influenced by. And the first people are our parents. And, you know, when you're given a name like that, or you're giving sort of this freedom to kind of express and kind of be you, I think that's sort of like the root of where people like you come from, and the roots of your, the way you think oftentimes comes from this freedom of expressing.
Totally.
Now, how did you get into voice acting?
So I think my path is a bit unique to me. And like, if you ask any actor how they got into like their field, like it's never the same. For me, I had some experience with theater, like in middle school and high school. And I also pursued it in college. And so I had like an acting background. And one day I was watching anime. I was like a really big anime fan in when I was in college. And I just thought, oh, it'd be cool if I could merge my two passions together. And that would be voice acting for like anime or animation or whatnot. And I've always loved watching cartoons and like watching people play video games. And I didn't really know how to get into it. Like, how do you start any career? I was talking to some of my castmates. We were in rehearsal. And I just told them about this brilliant thing that I just thought of, voice acting. How do I get into it? And one of them had mentioned that they had heard of a competition at a convention called Anime Expo, and that the winner had previously gotten the opportunity to go and work at a studio. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. I don't know anything about this. I'll go try it out and like just see what it's like, and then maybe really pursue it in the following year, because I didn't think that I would make it that far, but I was very lucky and I made it as a finalist. And the winner of the competition would have the opportunity to go get a studio tour and opportunity to audition for them. And I didn't win, but they liked me enough that they brought me in anyway. So it's like, I was like the secret winner.
So wait a minute. So what happens in that competition or that contest? Like what went on at, you say, was that Comic-Con?
This was at Anime Expo, yes.
In LA, yeah, at the convention center.
So it was different than how it's formatted nowadays. At the time, you had to find a monologue either from an anime or a video game, memorize it, and then come to the competition and perform it. So it was a lot different than nowadays. I think the way they have it now is they have it kind of like how you would do it in like the studio. They would have a script and then you would read the script. But back then you had to memorize it and come in. So it was kind of, it felt like a theater audition. But yeah, so I actually, when I got up, I was so nervous to perform in front of people. And I was so nervous that I got up and then I said about three words and then it just blanked out. I forgot all the words and I was like shaking in my boots. And so I just started mumbling. I was like, and then it came back and I was like, okay. And then I just like went on autopilot. And I was like, I did the thing. And then one of the judges was like, oh, it was hard to understand you at first, but then it really like kicked in. And I was like, okay, I'm glad they didn't notice that I had this temporary like
blackout
heart attack.
Wow.
But then for the finalist round, they had us on this huge stage and it was more like a normal dubbing session for anime where you would go cue by cue. So you have a line, they would do like play the three beeps. And then on the fourth imaginary beep is when you would start talking so that it would match the timing of like the picture. And so we did a couple rounds of that. And then they would play it back, play the scene back and hold just to see how you did. Yeah.
Wow. So that's how these voice actors are found in the anime space, huh?
At least for me.
And so once you get the, was it a studio that called you back or how did the callback work out?
Yeah, so so Bang Zoom Entertainment, they were the ones hosting the competition. And So they were the ones that actually got my information after the competition was done. And so they reached out to me and then planned a day for me to come and just do a tour of their studio. And then I got to sit in on the session just to see somebody else working. And then they had me go into studio and they had a bunch of sample scripts for me to read for them. So just to get an idea of like my voice, my range, and what I'm capable of. And at the time, I had no idea
Yeah,
what
makes
I was
sense.
doing as far as voice acting in particular goes.
Now, after that experience, do you get locked into that studio specifically, or do you have an agent and manager? Do you sign up? I mean, how does the workflow for your life happens after that first initial studio tour?
I guess I was just lucky in that they, because they had me on their radar, I would get like auditions or like sometimes based on just like my sound, they would just auto cast me in a role that would suit me. So I didn't have an agent for the longest time.
You didn't have
Trying to think.
an agent or manager right away.
No, for the longest time, I also, it was hard because I was also a student. For me, I was going to school at UC. A lot of studios are up in North Hollywood, Burbank, which is about like an hour to 2 hour drive. So it was kind of hard. I didn't really work very consistently for the first however many years of my career. I was also like helping my parents out at their restaurant, trying to balance like everything. And I probably didn't get an agent for like until like 10 years after my career like really
Wow.
started. So for me, it was a very gradual growth. I only had connections with this one studio, and then I would take classes just to get like, at least experience and exposure to other either studios or other casting agents, so that potentially if they liked me enough, then they would send me opportunities to audition for them. Or if I had worked with a director at one studio, if they went to another studio and they were like, oh, I know somebody that's good for that part, and they would bring me over to audition at that other studio. So that's how I kind of like grew my network. It was very slow and gradual. Whereas nowadays, I feel like there's a lot more opportunities, mainly because of like Twitter. A lot of people post things on there now. There's a lot of like these online databases that you can put yourself on, which is really great for a lot of actors that are starting now compared to like when I first started.
Yeah. Well, when you were going through school, I mean, what was your backup plan in terms of education? It wasn't voiceover work, right? You were intending to become somebody else.
I actually did not know what I really wanted to do, and I wasn't sure if I was going to pursue acting. I mean, I went in for the like drama major, and so I figured I would do something industry related if I didn't pursue acting, because I never, as much as I love theater, the concept of memorizing anything
Yeah.
is like so stressful. But so I figured, oh, I love production work. I love being involved. I even took some classes in sound design, because I was like, oh, okay, if voice acting even doesn't work out for me, then maybe I can go into the sound engineering side of it. So I guess that was my general plan, just to kind of like stay somewhere like somewhat involved in it all.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, can you tell me a little bit about how you stumbled onto the MICA project?
Yeah, for Micah, actually, so Edward Hong, who like heads the PGMVO list, he reached out to me personally to ask if he first asked, "Hey, are you comfortable doing boy voices?" And I was like, "Yeah, I am." And he was like, "Okay, I have a potential like audition that I want to send you." I'm like, "All right, cool." And so they sent me the audition, and it had like a bunch of characters like from the movie. It was like like girls and boys, and then some older characters. And I was like, okay, well, I know that my voice tends to run a bit young, so I mostly auditioned for the younger characters, including who I actually went on to go play in the movie. Yeah, so I thought it was really cool that Edward and the team like really tried hard to focus on getting a Vietnamese cast for this movie. I think because it's culturally so important to the movie, and it takes place in Vietnam as well. So I just thought that was really amazing. I had never worked on a Vietnamese project before and never dubbed like anything Vietnamese to English. So it was just like an amazing opportunity to really connect with that cultural side of me.
I don't think that there were. There has been any Vietnamese movies made in Vietnam dubbed entirely in English and done this way. Now, I might be wrong, but I don't think I can't recall another project where there has been this wide of this big of a scope in terms of, I think there was like a dozen voiceover actors for this film for Micah. Yeah, it's just a new thing, very new thing for the Vietnamese film community.
Yeah, very, very, very cool. I'm very glad that we got to be a part of this, and for it to have like a theatrical release even. Like it's not just like straight to video, but it had like an opportunity to reach a wider audience.
Now, when can you tell me a little bit about the process of a recording session, like from start to finish?
So for live action dubbing, like Micah, they used a program. I think it's like VoiceQ, or there's like RhythmOban. There's like a couple different ones, but basically, it feels like voice acting karaoke, which is really difficult if you're not used to it, because there's this the lines run across the screen, and then when it hits a certain marker, then that's when you're supposed to start talking. So then it's supposed to match the timing of when characters open and close their mouths, and it goes really quick. Usually you go by like scene by scene, so you can get through an entire scene. I guess like instead of like other forms of like dubbing, where if you go line by line, it can feel very disjointed emotionally. So if you go through a whole scene, it's if there's like a better flow, emotional flow. But again, like because you're reading the words for the first time, it can be very jarring, because it's like, okay, I don't really know where I'm heading towards the end of this sentence. Oh, it's a surprise question mark now. That sounded awkward. But I mean, with the great thing about voiceover is that you can start, stop, and start again, and do another take. What was great though is that we had Ham on working on directing it too. So obviously he knows this movie inside and out, and because he also speaks Vietnamese, and he can say like, oh, you know what? That translation's a little weird. Let me rewrite that so it makes more sense. Or it doesn't look right when the character is like talking, let me rewrite it a little bit so it matches their mouth a little bit more, so it's a little bit more seamless and doesn't feel very dubby looking. That's like the main process there. So you would get you get to watch over the scene once, and then you would do a pass. So then that you would see the band with your line, and you would read that. Sometimes they'll put in the other bands of like other characters, so you can know what you're responding to. So you're kind of like reading and like acting at the same time. It's quite a balancing act to be like, okay, I need to know like, okay, this is I need to hit this emotional beat here, here, and here while reading at the same time. And I have to say, like, it's not always easy just to read out loud.
Because I can imagine sort of the pacing, the tone, the emotionality, all of these things need to stay consistent to what's being shown and what's previously recorded from the previous actor or from the main actor, right?
Yeah, so when you're previewing, like, I try to as much as I can to remember like that particular actor's like tics or habits, or if they hit like certain emotional beats, I want to make sure that I try to hit something close along those lines so that I'm honoring what the original actor did as well and meshing it with like my interpretation as well.
Yeah, it sounds such a tricky proposition.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's like mind gymnastics, really.
Yeah. And how was it working with Ham?
Him is so lovely. He's so sweet. And like, really, I feel like he's like a kid at heart as well,
He
which
is, he is.
which is great because it's the main cast are like children. And so he's like, it's so satisfying to see him on the other side of the glass, like
Yeah.
laughing at something that he's probably seen a million times. But getting to see it in like a different form when I'm performing it.
The beauty of Ham is he's, very kid-like, childlike, but at the same time, he's a master of his craft. He
Yes,
knows filmmaking inside and out.
he's so specific. Our engineer Kyle, he's so patient because Ham would be like, okay, like of that pass, like I want to mix like that first pass and the second pass, but I want this line here, that line here, and then you didn't have to like puzzle it all together. So I'm like sitting there and just like listening to him like really orchestrate how he wants it all put together.
Yeah, now imagine how well he knows that space, but on top of it, he was an English lit major at UCLA, so he knows, books very well, he knows music very well, he can sing very well. He's just
Oh,
a
I didn't know that.
yeah, he can sing very well, plays instruments. He's a pretty interesting person, and I think you sort of need all of that to recreate a world, right? Like you're recreating these worlds of kids or drama or action or horror. You kind of have to know music, writing, what you're looking at visually, what makes good shots. So Ham has a lot of skill sets that that's required to be a good director.
Yeah, that's amazing. Definitely, because like I can only imagine what it's like when he's like actually there filming on set. He's like, okay, already thinking like how it's going to cut together, how the emotional pace is going to go, what music's going to like track it behind all the dialogue and everything.
Yeah,
That's amazing.
and the reason I bring that up is because it makes me think about voice acting. I think when you think about voice actors, you hear certain things, but there's like if you really pay attention, there's like these textures, I think, to human voices, right? But what are the elements that create texture? It's your experience, it's your way of thinking, it's what you've read, what you've consumed. In terms of content, what do you think has contributed to the texture in your specific arsenal, your voice arsenal?
Oh, wow. Consuming other media. I think I also tend to like media that has like like children as protagonists. So like I th think that's really shown in my work, at least, and it also kind of just suits like my voice type, and also like watching other people's work. And then they always say like, oh, like good actors borrow, great actors steal. So if you see something that's really great that you like, it's always great to like kind of put that in your own pocket. And even if your like imitation of it isn't like exactly like that other actor or a person, you create something new because it's a little bit of you and them as well. So I'd say that's how it is for me, even like when I'm coming up with like characters or deciding like, oh, what's like the right vocal placement for people.
Right. And how much time do you get to prep on a typical job?
That's really complicated. Well, most of the time, there is no prep because we never get voice acting scripts ahead of time. Very rarely do we get that opportunity. So for unless like I would assume, I think for like commercial scripts, you'll usually get that ahead of time. Sometimes for animation scripts as well, video games for dubbing, I usually never see that ahead of time. So it's always you have to kind of come in prepared for anything, because a lot of times they don't even tell you what the project is, what character you're playing, anything about your character at all. You come in and the director will be like, all right, this is the overall storyline of this project. This is your character. This is how they view everything. And then you go.
Wow.
And then I feel like it always takes like maybe like the first like 10, 15 minutes for you to really hone in on the character. And they're like, okay, that's where we want you to stay. But for the in the case of Micah, Ham was really generous in like giving us the opportunity to see the scripts ahead of time, and he also sent a screener. So then I was able to kind of like watch and like read along with the script to have an idea of like where it's going and like a better understanding of the character. So when I went in, I don't feel as like surprised about what's going on.
Right.
I mean, some directors like love having that because like, oh, then if you're surprised at the reveal, that's what the character's going through
Right.
too. But so I think I can see there's like pros and cons, but it's I personally like to be prepared as much as possible. So I think it was really nice that he was able to give us, the tools to before we come in.
You sound like you've made a lot of sort of strides in your work, and you've been at it for a long time. But I'm pretty sure that there were probably some dark times and some tough times, in the early years. What kind of made you sort of strong enough or allowed you to kind of punch through and take it this far?
I think motivation-wise, I
Yeah.
definitely like early on in my career, like the work is very inconsistent. Even now, like you have your dry spells, and then sometimes it's just like raining work. But for me, like I don't know, I just enjoy it so much. I really love the community. I find voiceover people to be very, very chill. Like,
Yeah.
if they get an audition and they're like, oh, I'm not really right for this character, but my friend is really great at these kind of voices, and then like we'll recommend each other, and I really love that kind of community. Animation and video games are just really fun. But yeah, for me, like when I'm going through like a slump, I tend to sign up for classes just to be like, all right, gotta hone those chops, gotta stay on top of trends, gotta know the different genres of voice actors. So like, okay, I tend to focus a lot on character, which is like animation, video games, and so I'm like, okay, maybe I should take a little bit more classes to get a little bit better at like commercial work or promo work. Also just it's kind of nice to have like reassurance that I'm doing okay. Have a teacher in class being like, okay, you're on the right track. So it's a lot of our work is also just kind of luck as well,
Yeah.
getting cast, because there's only one role, and there's like 50 to 300 people audition for the same role. Only one person's going to get it, and like just because you don't get it doesn't mean that you're a terrible actor. It's just that there's only one role to fill.
Right.
But yeah, I think for me, I've discovered the healthier outlook is to view each audition as an opportunity to play and an opportunity to show the casting director that what I can do, show them my acting chops. So I just always want to send in the best possible audition out there as possible. And that is like my main goal, is to like get on someone's like good folder. So if they have like little minor roles that they need to fill, that they don't have time to audition for, they can just be like, oh, I remember this person being really good at this kind of character. Let me just pull them in to do that little bit. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's the kind of game that I use for auditions.
That's amazing. Now, where do you go to your classes? And then, I think my question really is, when you are in a slump, how do you know you're in a slump then to go to classes? Like, what is the timing? How long does it take for you to go into a slump and then be like, oh, it's time to take classes? And then where do you go to classes?
Majority of the time, like if I see like a really interesting class or like a casting director that I want to like get to know better, like what are their like pet peeves, like do they prefer to hear when they get auditions, and just to see what it's like to work with them. Then if I see one, then I just like sign up for it immediately. Sometimes it's recommendations from other actors. If they're like, oh, this teacher is amazing, you need to take their class, then I'll definitely keep an eye out for them, or like I'll follow them on their social media. So then if they announce that, oh, I'm offering a class, then I can just jump on it right away. There's like a lot of really amazing places for classes. There's like the VO voiceover like resource that has like a lot of listings of like classes, coaches, studios, teachers on there. A lot of classes, like some of them that I took before the pandemic, a lot of them took place in studios. So it was always nice to get the chance to be in the studio space, to know what it's like on the other side of the glass, like watching another actor perform, what it's like to be in the studio, and like how to like act in front of a mic. Because like if you have experience with theater or on camera, it's wildly different than approach for voiceover, because you know nobody's going to be able to see the expression in your eyes. They might be able to hear it a little bit in your voice, but you sometimes you need to amplify it a little bit more to convey certain emotions. Also, you know, you learn like what it's like to like kind of act within like a certain space around the mic, because if you move too far off mic, then it's going to sound inconsistent. So I always liked opportunities when classes were in studio. But I feel like these days a lot of it is virtual, because it's so much more convenient to perform, you know, in your home studio over Zoom with a casting director, and that way you can also get the chance to like practice writing your game if you like you don't want to blow out your mic in everybody else's ears. But yeah, I love taking classes because you get to see so many other people perform. And sometimes like if you perform the same copy, then you can see like, oh, when a casting director is listening to auditions, they're listening to the same lines over and over again. And sometimes there's like a certain like trend of like certain choices made over and over again, or you can kind of see like where people deviate, and see how they work, and be like, oh, okay, that's a really cool way to approach it. I want to try to do that for myself. So classes are really, really valuable to me. I get really inspired when I watch other people act.
That's a mark of a true professional is, when you have free time, you get better. You try to find people who can make you a better actor, better voiceover person. And that's a mark of a true professional because, we are constantly changing. And if we're not going up, we're going down, right? So it's like we never, as human beings, we don't stay. It's like we don't, it's rare that we just sit still or stand still. But, it's either you can get better or you just not improving on your game.
Yeah, I'm always trying to, I guess. And like I think maybe it's because like I hadn't had an agent in for so long, and so even now with my agency, like you know, they having an agent just helps you to like get access to more auditions, like the ones that are only sent to agencies, like bigger clients and like union work. But even besides like having my agency, like I always try to seek out audition opportunities for myself as well. Like if I see them on like say Twitter, then I'll reach out and be like, hey, I've never worked with you before, but here are my demos. I work with this agency, I'd love to work with you and then see if anything comes back from it, like an audition or something. So it's always good to kind of like still like, keep going at it to try to like find more work.
Have you been to Vietnam before?
I haven't. Isn't that crazy? I haven't had the opportunity to yet. I hope to someday, like probably go back with my parents or something, just to kind of because they would have a better easier time getting around, and also just kind of learn from them like what their life or their childhoods were like there and how it's different from now.
What do you think it'll be like?
I'm not really sure. I guess like for me, like I've seen pictures from before, but I'm sure like it's really industrialized now, depending like cities that and place that you go to. But I don't know. I think a thing that I would look most forward to is like food, like really delicious food.
But you live in the OC, right?
I do.
The food in Orange County, I mean,
So.
this is very controversial for me to say, but I'm going to tell you, it has one of, I think Vietnam has the best Vietnamese food. I mean, OC has the best Vietnamese food in the world. Yeah, very controversial thing to say, but if you think about it, right? We have here in California, produce that's grown. We have the best seafood. We have the best meats. We have the best ingredients for all of the, these culinary treats. And Vietnam, it's getting better though. Is the motherland. Obviously the food comes from there. And I'm biased because the food in Orange County, Vietnamese food is so robust. And sometimes in Vietnam, it's inconsistent, but obviously it's the origin, the birthplace of all the dishes that we get to enjoy.
That makes a lot of sense. So okay, I may even though like that's good to keep in mind, so I don't go over there and be like, I've had this before.
A lot of people go over there with this expectation that the pho is like dynamite, but it's difficult to find like high quality beef bones, high quality food that's, all of these things are kind of lacking in some ways. You have to bring in Australian beef sometimes, and not all places are using the same ingredients. So it's very inconsistent. Yeah, that's just
To
my
know.
controversial. Yeah. Obviously, I'm
I'm sure
making.
also like the hot weather makes it hard to like enjoy like overheated.
Well, I look forward to seeing and hearing your voice in the new Micah. It's all out on VOD now. We can catch it on the streaming service. So I look forward. Which character do you play again?
I play the lead boy Home. He is so spunky. He's really like he's the actor for him is like incredible. Like this really incredible young actor. He has a lot of like really emotional scenes with his parents, and then he has like a little like fun, like playful side when he's with the other kids. I'm really grateful to be his like English voice. 'Cause like they go through so much in this like short amount of time.
Yeah, it's amazing that you're playing a little boy's a character. I can't wait to see it. Well, Santi, thank you so much for coming on. I know it's early in the morning, and I appreciate you getting and coordinating this on very last, minute with Ham.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun. I really hope a lot of people get to watch.
Yes, I do too, because it's a great film. And thank you once again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. The Vietnamese is produced by Brittany Tran. Special thanks to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast. You can also find us on YouTube, where you can subscribe, like, and comment. Please rate and give us a review wherever you find our podcasts.